It's called to order the Improvements Committee meeting of June 3rd, 2020. First thing on the agenda is comments from the public. Is there anyone on the call that would like to make a comment at this time? Hearing none, we will move right on to review monthly updates. Paul.
Good morning, everyone. This is Paul Stevenson, Director of Operations. So as it relates to water storage, the reservoirs are all full as of the 31st. So all topped off and ready for the season to supply water. Everything's going pretty well there, other than we had an issue where one of our compressors has failed over at the Chesbrough Reservoir. And those compressors are utilized to aerate the iron and manganese that are in the reservoir, and that oxidizes them out of solution and allows them to be filtered. So staff scrambled around to get a replacement motor, and that's back in and functioning. So everything's going okay now. At the wastewater reclamation plant, it's the time of season that we fire that up and start supplying recycled water to the country club. One of the units, so we have two side-by-side plants, an east and a west. On one of them, a pipe ruptured and it started gushing water out. Staff made a repair. It's functioning right now. And we are continuing to supply recycled water to the country club as of the 1st. And they're also continuing to utilize some raw water pumping from the river while it's available as well. Then going on to projects, any question with those items? Hearing none, I'll move forward. On projects, nothing on the retreats east and north. On the north development, no update there as well. Really no update with the highway offsite improvements. That project's still outstanding. On the Murrieta Gardens lots 4 and 5, there was a sewer interceptor that was installed along with some sewer connections with some oversight by a coastlands inspection team. So that went well. On the Murrieta Garden Marketplace, everybody's aware of that. The Bel Air was opened. The district had to provide an acceptance letter to help facilitate that happening. And Coastland did work with the developers and legal counsel to develop a bond for outstanding items, which as noted in the packet is related to the detention basin primarily. On lot 11, which is the gas station cart, So lot 10, there hasn't been any comments back on that. Coastland provided some plan check comments to that project and just hasn't heard anything back from them yet. So it's kind of in a standstill. Kind of the same thing with lot 11, which is the gas station car wash project. And scrolling down, Murrieta Gardens infrastructure, no update there. On the FAA Business Park, Coastlands inspection team provided oversight of an 8-inch waterline connection there. Currently, they're asking for a sign off for water and sewer connections that they've been installed per district standards. So I'm going to be working on that with that project. Basically it's wrapping up, and the only thing outstanding is I believe they need to pay fees before we turn on the water services there. On the Riverview project, a water study was submitted and it is in process of being reviewed by Coastland. Lori, are you on the line?
I am. Hey, Paul.
Do you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, we're currently reviewing it. Also, I've been in phone communication with one of the engineers from McKay and Soms. I believe they're also preparing an improvement plan package to be submitted shortly, likely this week or next.
All right. That's a good update. Residences, Murrieta Hills East. So a letter was submitted to Bob Kyle of MRK Development. to confirm the responsibilities of the 670 financing and services agreement by our general manager. And so I haven't heard anything back as it related to that submittal, but let's move forward. On district projects for the effluent pumps that went in, they're installed, but one of them was having issues with the cooling water. So as the shafts spin, there's packing glands that go around the shafts, and they're supposed to allow some water to go around there to lubricate them and keep them cool. There was kind of an issue with that, and the contractor that installed those will actually be out today working on that. So that's one outstanding item to wrap up that project, and we can hopefully consider it done. No update on the water rights renewal. I need to provide some information back to our contractor that we're working with on that. On the recycled water untreated water fee study, as it was noted in the board meeting, it's on hold, and it's an item for discussion later on in the committee. The sodium hypochlorite project, where we're going to bleach, tanks are installed for that project. So the two tanks are installed, and we've ordered parts and materials to do all the piping connections from the tanks to the chemical feed skids within the wastewater reclamation facility. Those are all specialized parts that are chemical resistant and should give us the longest lasting infrastructure we have there, other than going to like a complete stainless steel system. So we're gonna put those systems in, and then we're gonna pour concrete around the chemical trench that's also installed around there as well. And then we have to work on a lot of wiring of components for each tank's going to have a tank level sensor in it, as well as a transfer pump that's going to transfer bleach from one tank to another, and a lot of other miscellaneous connections that need to be done around the facility as it relates to that. On the West Staff electrical panel replacement, that project has been moving forward. Telstar, which is the contractor for that project, has been on site for the past week and a half, on and off. They poured a new pad for the electrical panel and have been laying out wiring and getting that all set to be installed. And as of yesterday, I issued a change order after a discussion with them to allow an extension of 1 week. The end of the project was supposed to be this Friday, but citing COVID issues and just wanting to make sure that everything's done well and correctly, wanted to give them there an extra week time just to make sure it's gonna go in right without any issues. And it's not gonna affect our operations at this point. So there was no concern with that. And the Chesboro aeration project, the buoys are still installed there. Haven't had any issues since those have been installed. Everything's going okay with that. Seems to be a typo here in this packet, but the dam inundation mapping and emergency action plans, those have been submitted. Actually just got a feedback from the Sac County Sheriff's Office yesterday that they haven't gotten to review, citing COVID issues as well as civil unrest. And therefore, they're just starting to get to the reviews of the emergency action plans. And on the dry barrel fire hydrant replacements, we've procured some of the hydrants and are just waiting until we can have staff working together, because it takes multiple staff working in close quarters to get those installations done. Any questions on any of those items?
So Paul, the aeration project, I guess it appears to be working, but we're still testing. Where are we testing for that problem?
So we, for the iron and manganese issue that occurred last year, that's part of what we have done there is we put in additional aeration systems to make sure that the iron and manganese gets oxidized. And the issue last year was solely around manganese. And that's an ion that's present in the soils around the reservoir that gets dissolved into solution. And what the aeration does just simply oxidizes it enough that it comes out of solution and allows it to be filtered. And that project's complete. And how we monitor it is we grab samples every day on the raw water coming into the plant, test it for the iron and manganese levels, and then also through the treatment process. So at halfway through the treatment process, it's tested. And then at the back end of the treatment process, it's tested to make sure that we're within acceptable levels.
Great, thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions, comments? I know we're gonna touch on this Murrieta Hills East situation again further on down the agenda, but.
This is Amelia. Did John Sullivan, is that you? Were you able to get on the call?
Yeah, I'm watching on my computer and I have my phone.
Okay, good. I'm glad you were able to get on.
Thank you.
This is Les Clark. Just a comment on Paul's response to the question of the aeration system. Should that be something that is published to the community so that they understand it as well?
Yeah, we could do something for our website to share more information as it relates to that. Kind of want to keep sleeping dog, you know, you could keep the sleeping dog quiet and just, you know, as long as there's no issues, you know, hopefully it's out of sight, out of mind. And it's very clearly in our staff's minds, but we can put that on our website.
I think we can do that, and we can also add something to the pipelines, take some pictures and explain why, and sort of get the community around that. That's a good comment, Les.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with Paul. I'm not sure I would make a big splash with this thing, but it wouldn't hurt to have the information available somewhere. Okay, anything more on the monthly updates? Hearing none, let's move on to considering the approval of the truck purchase. Paul?
Yes, Amelia, if you could scroll to that item.
And I wanted everybody to know that there was an update that was posted on the internet. So it's one of the updates that's on there, and that's what we're looking at now.
All right. So we sent out, a proposal to several local dealerships, four of them in particular, for a new F-150 truck. This was to replace an older district vehicle purchased in 1997, currently has 131,000 miles on it. It's come to the end of its useful life. And the costs getting to the point where maintaining it is not cost effective anymore. So that's why we went out to bid. And there was a capital project actually put up for that replacement. So that's why we went out to bid for this. The lowest and only bidder was Folsom Lake Ford. As to why they were the only bidder, I'm not exactly 100% sure, but it seems like from talking to them that they seem to order from the same place, and if they don't have something on stock, then they're kind of behind the eight ball and they have to have something built at the factory, which in light of recent circumstances could be way, way, way out as far as ever procuring that. So Folsom Lake Ford was the sole bidder on this within the general costs of what the truck would be. And therefore, we're taking that forward for approval. Any questions on that?
I can tell you that I buy a few of these every year, and this is a decent price. In fact, I'm surprised that you got such a good price out of them under the circumstances, if they were the only bidder. But I certainly think we'll just bring this forward. I think purchasing this is a no-brainer. So.
Okay.
Anyone else? Mm-hmm. Hearing none, we will move on to considering the adoption of the sewer code revisions.
And on this as well, there was an update to the packet. We made a few more changes to the sewer code itself. I'll go to the memo, which is in the packet. And then I'll click over to the actual sewer code if anybody wants to see it. There's an updated sewer code, both red line and a clean version of it on the internet.
Yes, so the sewer code update, that's just cleaning up a lot of typos and then modernization of some items that included prohibition of wastes. Just modernizing some of the information there, and then clarifying the delineation of district versus customer responsibilities, which was somewhat unclear as it related to drawings, and to remove recycled water information, which now is in its own code. So we just completely separated recycled water out from sewer as it sits within its own code. And then also to clarify penalties for non-compliance or violations. That's always been very unclear to district staff as well as the public as it relates to any issues relating to that. So we wanted to make that very clear. And all these changes are made in a track changes mode. That's why you see all the markups within it. And it's all cleaned up. And if approved by the committee, then we will take it forward to district council for further review and then to the board for adoption.
Comments or questions? So,
questions here.
Go ahead, Richard.
I have a few questions, and one is, I'm wondering who these changes affect and how they affect them. And one thing that I was noticing that this seemed to affect people in, you know, circular lots in RMA land, is that correct?
Yeah, that created an ambiguity that, some of the language that was in the code talked about the customer service connection, where it's always been understood that it's been at the stub. And so it does clear that up. It's in conformance with what occurs in other districts throughout the state. So that's what we did, is we clarified that, because we do have the unusual circumstance of having circle lots within this district with RMA land between the circle lot and district easements.
Okay, I'd just like to make one comment that the way it was before, there was nothing ambiguous about it at all. It was very clear that the homeowner's responsibility ended at the property line. It was very clear and unambiguous. And that it seems like there's nothing. What's being changed is it's literally being changed. And that this came up about, what was it, 6 months or a year ago, when some guy got stuck with a $6,000 bill. And looking at the sewer code, it was very unambiguous that it was not his responsibility, but somehow CSD and the board stuck him with that $6,000 bill.
So let me clarify for you, if I may. May I comment on that?
Yes.
All right. So with circle lots, everybody may or may not be aware that a lot of people within the community that have these circle lots get, they go to the RMA and then they get exclusive use of properties that are RMA properties. And so they build outside their circle lot. They landscape outside their circle lot. these areas basically, you know, that they landscape and control go beyond. Someone's, excuse me, I'm distracted by
excuse,
something.
Excuse me, but if you're not speaking, please mute yourself. It's a little irritating.
So when people do have an exclusive use beyond their circle lot and with landscaping plans and irrigation systems and trees planted over the sewer lines or the water lines or the drainage lines, that's where it changes things somewhat. And that's where we wanted to be very clear that the connection is at the sewer stub versus wherever, you know, their property line ends, because the service that they have is solely there to serve whatever unit that's being served. And that's why it's always been, and it's, as I mentioned in the state, it's common that it's at the stub of where the connection's made, because if a home is being built or any unit or development or whatever is connected, it's at there's always a point of connection. Otherwise there's kind of like a no man's land section in between point A and point B. And if it's to the benefit of the user, then that's where it becomes, you know, that's where the responsibility lies, is at that point of connection. So.
The other point would be that if there is a problem in that area, it shouldn't be up to CSD to go in and tear up someone's landscaping an RMA area to do the work. Our responsibility should stop at the stub. I think that's the logical place for our responsibilities to end. Does that make sense, Richard?
Yes. Oh, I 100% agree with the change. I'm just saying that the way the code read before, and it was very clear that at that point, and until the code is changed, the homeowner's responsibility ends at the property line. And that, you know, I 100% agree with CSD changing that. But until CSD changes it, it's CSD's code, and I think CSD needs to abide by their code instead of just saying, hey, we don't like it, so we're not going to go with what it clearly says. So, you know, I'm not arguing against the change at all.
Okay. Hey, Richard, I would like to comment on that. Being on the board at that time, CSD spent effort to determine what was the cause of the problems that homeowner faced. And it was determined that it was due to redwood roots. And he had planted his trees not per the agreement that was done with RMA. Essentially, the plans he had submitted to RMA, it was pointed out to avoid the sewer access ports. And the trees that were planted were indeed too close to it. So it was really determined that it was the homeowner's fault in that case. If it had been our fault or RMA's fault, we would have gone a different direction. But it was pretty clear in the discussions that it was because of the homeowner planting the trees in violation of what he got approved from RMA that we felt that was the issue. That's why he was, as you said, stuck with that $6,000 bill. It was, there was a lot of thought and effort put into that decision.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Who just spoke? This is Amelia. Who was that who just spoke? I don't recognize your voice.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Maury Graff.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, I 100% agree that, you know, it was his fault, and he should have. But on the other hand, I think, as residents, we should be able to rely on what the code says, and especially when it is very clear on where our responsibility ends. And that, you know, looking at the code, you know, it was very clear that his responsibility ended at the property line. And, you know, if we as residents don't like it, there's nothing we can do about it. If CSD doesn't like it and thinks it can be changed, go ahead and change it. And that's what you're doing now which I 100% agree with. But until it's changed, mm-hmm. I think CSD needs to abide by their code. So, I mean, I don't mean to drag this on and on, but, you know, I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Anything further on this? So I'll be honest with you. I went through this, but then I haven't had time to look at the revised code that was sent out yesterday afternoon. What additional changes were made?
Yes, added the definition of sewer interceptor and just some minor other changes as it related to typos.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I have a couple more. I have a couple of typos that I don't know if they're still in there, but if anybody's interested, I can email them to somebody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Please forward them to the district secretary and she can disseminate that information.
Thank you very much.
And another question. I'm wondering what impact this has on people in the village, these changes. The village has an odd configuration of the sewer system, and it's kind of hard to figure out how this applies to them. Do these changes affect them in any way?
No.
Okay. And one last question. Looking at the sewer code, it's, let me put it this way. How the hell does this apply to the village? I mean, you know, I look at the definition of a main line and lateral lines and, you know, they don't, and private lines and roads, and it doesn't quite seem to apply. And looking at this code, it's kind of hard to figure out how it applies and who is responsible for paying and maintenance for different parts of the sewer system. Could somebody address that?
I'm sorry, but you kept breaking up and I really actually couldn't clearly hear what you're actually asking.
Okay. In the village, we have an odd configuration of the sewers where they don't go down the roads and they go across multiple lots. And I find it hard to understand how this sewer code applies in that situation. And could you explain that to me?
How it applies to the village, I can let you know that the village system was installed prior to the district existing and was done by the Operating Engineers Pension Trust Fund. And the way it's been explained to me since I started and carried forward with is that the units that sit over a line, those function as a lateral that serve that unit, and then where it runs to the street, that would be considered the connection to the district's system. So as the units within the village sit directly on top of their service lines, they have shared responsibilities. And then that's always been coordinated with the manager over there at the village. When we run into issues, we try to assist as best we can, but that's kind of I think we have a standard drawing. It's like one of the last of our standard drawings under the sewer standard drawings that kind of depicts that a little bit. But essentially, those are all considered private sewer lines until they hit the street.
Private
sewer lines. Does that clear your question up?
Not really. it clears up what your understanding is. Now, question I have is, back in the olden days, until about a year or two ago, CSD was responsible for maintaining all these sewer lines that were on private property and in the common areas. And that a year or two ago, that changed, that we're now having to pay for that.
I'm not following you.
Okay. Well, there's residents over here that tell me they've had sewer problems And there's a line from their house going under several other houses. And I'm not sure I can explain it right now, but.
Like I've mentioned,
let's do this, Richard.
Go ahead.
Can Richard give you a call, or can you have this discussion where you can figure out what the question is and try and answer it as best you can?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Is that okay with you, Richard?
Yes.
Okay, good. Anything further on the sewer code revisions? Hearing none, let's move that on and consider it approved by the committee.
Thank you. So we can take that forward to district council for further review.
Correct.
All right.
Next item on the agenda is the wooden pedestrian bridge parcel conveyance update.
Lori, you can give it. This is Mark. So I'm going to have Lori provide this update.
Yep. Hey, everybody. This is Lori Loaiza from Coastland. Just a quick update on the pedestrian bridge status. A few things. It's my understanding that RMA will be the presumed owner to which the property will be conveyed. So we'll need to coordinate with them on that. The next few steps in order to do that will be to get a title company to prepare like a preliminary title report, and they'll need to actually convey the property. We'll need to get a surveyor who will simultaneously prepare the backups, the attachments for the conveyance documents, and also as part of that package, we'll also do an easement over the whole property so that when the property is conveyed to RMA, the district will maintain an easement for their utilities that exist. And then once we complete all of that, and there's some costs associated with that, Mark, that I had sent you an email, they're relatively minor. I think I can get into details here if you would like. And then we'll put that package together, and then we'll need to present it to the board and discuss the actual conveyance. Some coordination with RMA will probably also need to happen sort of concurrently with that. So that more or less where this stands. There's a few details associated with it that when we convey it to the board that we'll need to discuss, mostly because we will be conveying it without, you know, any fee, which according to my preliminary discussions with district council is acceptable, but we just have to document why that's acceptable in this case. So I don't know. I can answer more questions about this if others are interested, but that's kind of the summary of where we stand.
This is Paul. Has RMA conveyed that they want to accept it?
So we have had discussions. This started with Greg Vorster and then with Denise Petland right now. And so that final discussion has not been had with Greg leaving. We were in that discussion. It's something that I believe it has to be done. It was expected from the start. The benefit accrues fully to the RMA. And so when looking at the district's function, providing services for the entire district, something that accrues specifically only to that function, it's not necessarily, in my opinion, staff's opinion, appropriate to have the CSD continue to hold this land. It was intended, it's very clear in documents and meetings as this occurred, that the intention was to convey this to the RMA. And the assistant general manager, who's now functioning as general manager at RMA, was involved at the time. So that individual, and this is according to newspaper articles and other discussions. So I believe it was really clear at that time. That was for all involved, that was a mix up, or not a mix up, but an issue where PTF, the trust for the union and RMA were at loggerheads and could not come to an agreement. So the CSD stepped in on behalf of the RMA to accept that parcel and have it conveyed from PTF to CSD on behalf of RMA to simply speed the process and get the bridge constructed. So that's right now. So that is a step, Paul, that it needs to be confirmed, but I think honestly, I mean, if the board chooses to have the CSD retain the parcel, that's the choice of the board. But I would believe there would have to be a justification for CSD to retain it. Also understand that with that, the CSD would have to absorb, perhaps even with back fees, the cost of a state lands commission lease over the river. That was supposed to have been established at the time CSD accepted the parcels, and that was never established. And that came out as we were updating the lease for the Yellow Bridge.
Mm-hmm. So there's no doubt that the intent was to convey the property back to RMA, and I don't think anybody disagrees with that. This has been on the agenda for quite some time. Where's the ball? Whose court is it in? And what's the time frame for getting this done?
So right now, most of the work is being done by Coastland to put the instruments together. And it's something that would have to be handed to the current general manager, since I was, you know, this was put on the back burner as other priorities for Coastland arose with the development going on. And so this is something that needs to be handed off to the new GM.
I will. Lori, how long is this going to take?
Honestly, it won't take that long. I have a surveyor lined up to put the easement stuff all together, and I can send them an email and get them started on that today. We can call the title company and get that rolling. So it should be able to be done fairly quickly, you know, once we get all the balls in place.
What?
So it, as Mark said, it's just taken a while only because it's just been put on the back burner, not because it's actually a process that takes a long time.
This is John Sullivan. Oh, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is the bridge, the landings on the bridge and the span, is that fee or is that an easement?
Right now, I have a grant deed that shows the district owns it in fee. And so that's what this question is about, is conveying that piece of land to RMA, and then the district would retain an easement over it because there are utilities in that land.
Lori, is that just the landing points, or is there an actual cutout?
I don't know that I understand your question, John. There is, it's just a little piece of property, a portion of parcel 7. I mean, I don't know if I can send you a copy of the grant deed, if that's appropriate.
No, I can see it on the county's website. I'm not.
It's just an odd little shape.
I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
I was just wanting to know how they handled the spans. Because they're not really in the river, right? Except for Randy, what have we got? Two structurals in the river?
There's two columns in the river, but all of the property plus outside of the rail is all that parcel. It goes from one side of the river to the other, completely encompasses the footprint of the bridge, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Anything else on that? Lori, I don't know why we just don't just go for this and get the process going and get this done. I don't see any reason why we would hold back from just going forward and doing what we need to do to get it done.
I agree. And so I'll go ahead and I'll get the ball rolling and start taking care of it.
Thank you.
Tom, I'll coordinate with you as necessary, but I think we can do a large piece of this, honestly.
Okay. So let's move on to item number 7 on the agenda, discuss raw water rate study.
So this item, as we discussed at the last board meeting, is going to be on hold to potentially next year's Prop 218 notice. As John has mentioned, he's got a concern about as waters are conveyed from the Clementia Reservoir over to Laguna Joaquin or from the Granley's Dam diversion through the CIA to Laguna Joaquin, that it's being utilized through the CIA infrastructure. So we have a discussion to be had with John and the other interests as it relates to the CIA before we can really move forward on that. But that's essentially where it's at right now, is that what our consultants have provided from Clear Source. John has the concern of the CIA infrastructure costs being accounted for. So we need to look at that between now and next year.
So who are going to be involved in those discussions?
Probably myself and John and anyone else surrounding us.
Tom.
So Randy, this is John. I had talked to Mark about this. He was asking me what I thought the charge should be. The district, you know, has that and now understanding that it's about $97 per acre foot to get water into storage. If we're diverting directly down the ditch, the amortization of the ditch with about 3,600 acre feet a year going down it and the use of the dam, I told him that I thought a fair charge for that would be about $40 an acre foot to use the ditch infrastructure and divert water down the ditch, but only for the water that's in excess of their licensed right. Okay, so the CSD through the CIA delivers that 28 hundredths of a cubic foot, so that's about, you know, half an acre foot a day that goes in there. But they have typically used significantly more than that to freshen the lake. The one year we just flooded it trying to fix the midge fly problem and the quality problem after we had that one big year. But the cost and the improvements that the CIA has made, if you amortize those over 10 years and the dam over 50 years, $40 an acre foot seemed like a reasonable number. And that number is, you know, it's important for the CIA as a district to be able to put some money aside for the eventual repairs. And God help us, we had some kind of catastrophe on the Granley's Dam that, you know, we'd have to do an emergency repair. So there's always that weird eventuality. And in this year, nothing seems like a surprise. So
there's a lot to be discussed. And then I will outline, it gets a little confusing as it relates to water rights, time of year, place of use, and where these items are drawn from. And I'm going to try to put together an exhibit to help clarify this issues for other people outside of John and myself. And so once we get that together, then I'll have a discussion with John, then we can take that forward for a better discussion here at the committee in the future. Does it sound good, John?
Great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm anxious to get a notice out in some form or fashion, even if CIA needs to notify RMA and copy CSD on a letter that's our proposal to the district, and if they have any comment, they should get hold of the district. So, you know, from my perspective, that is, I think, gives you the ability to have a conversation and get, a notice out to them, long before we get to next July. We probably ran somewhere around $80,000 to $100,000 worth of excess water in and out of Laguna Joaquin over the last 4 years. So RMA, they've not changing that rate for all those years and then having a study that actually says it's 3.5 times, what we've been charged. That's pretty good evidence that we haven't been fully recovering the costs and the use of the CIA ditch. And that's, that's kind of one customer subsidizing another in this particular case.
Okay. So we've got a plan. You're going to work on, Paul, you're going to work on some kind of a exhibit, and you're going to get with John and talk through this. Would it be useful for the people that did the water rate study to be involved, or do you plan on getting them back involved?
No, not at this point. Maybe towards Prop 218 adoption next year if we need to. But not at this point.
Okay. What's your time frame? When do you think you're going to bring back to the committee?
Maybe 2-3 months.
Okay.
I'm going to try to get on it, but we got a lot of competing priorities as we're heading into summer or in summer. So,
yeah, sure.
Operation.
Okay. Gotcha. Great. Anybody else? Comments, questions? Raw water rate study? Hearing none, let's move on to discuss the extension of the coastland engineering contract. Paul?
All right. So this item.
I want to let everybody know that this item was also in addition to the website. So you can find it on the website.
All right. So Amelia's got it up here on the Zoom meeting. That's great. And so the district had gone out for engineering services back in March of 2016. And then the awarded contractor for that was Coastland Civil Engineering, Inc., which we always refer to as Coastland. And it was for a term of 3 years, which has expired last April 26, 2019. And as we've continued to do work with Coastland beyond this contract expiration, we're looking to have the board see if they, can justify that we've continued to work with Coastland beyond that contract period and then ratify any payments and work beyond that contract extension. And then, beyond that contract period, and then to extend the contract another 2 years or until such time we can go out to bid again.
Okay. Comments, questions?
This is John Sullivan. I have comments. We've probably paid, most of that $375,000 to the district for Coastland's work. And, two big chunks of it are in dispute. And I think there's four things that need to be done rather than extend it. You can't have a clause in their agreement that they are being contracted for construction observation when you don't have a construction observation clause in the contract with the developer. So they're billing you and you don't have a right to bill us. And so you got to take that out of their contract, and specifically only if it's requested to observe something that you send them an email for observation. The second item is really the issue of travel time, and it's excessive. If you look at their billing, they're charging a couple hours every time they come here for travel. At, you know, travel rate, I don't know what it is, but it needs to be negotiated down, or it needs to be negotiated out. The third item is you know, how they're preparing their billings, and maybe this is just the problem with how they turn them out and how the district handles them, but we know that's been a debacle, and on a monthly basis, we're supposed to get a reconciliation. We haven't gotten one for 10 months, and then we get thrown a big bill, and that just doesn't work for us. But the reality is that, you know, the Coastland agreement, when they send you an estimate, if you look at the last disputed bills, they send you an estimate that construction, inspection, and testing is going to be $50,000, and it turns out to be $117,000. You would think that somebody would have stopped and said, hey, what's going on here? That was their estimate that went into the contract, not the district's estimate. And yet you let it go 50, 100% over bill without anybody, you know, lifting up their hand and saying, hey, what's going on here? So that's got to get fixed too. So, I have no problem working. I think their work is good, but I have to tell you, they're ridiculously expensive. The travel time they've been allowed to, in my opinion, pad their bill because they have this construction observation clause with you guys. We don't have with you, and if that doesn't get fixed, all you're going to be doing is fighting a dispute with me for the next year. So let's get that fixed.
So a couple questions. Lori, where are you coming from? I see you got four offices. Are you coming from, do people start billing when they leave their home or your office in Auburn? Or how exactly does that work?
Well, I think for the inspectors, and I'd have to go check and see exactly how that works. I don't think the inspectors bill for their time because that's not how the construction inspection is billed. I think they get billed for time in the truck, but not hours worked for the inspector. So that's different than the engineer. For me, as engineering staff, if I travel, then yes, I would. It's only Auburn office that services this, and I have billed my travel time. That's just, you know, the few times I come to the district. You know, I don't usually come to district more than once or twice a month, and lately it hasn't been at all. So for me, yes, I do bill travel time, but the inspectors do not, I believe, bill travel
time
that exact way.
John, is that how you understand it, or you're looking at the bills? Are they billing for travel time?
Yeah, I am,
for
inspectors? And there's travel time charge
for inspectors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to talk about that offline because I'm not seeing what he said.
Yeah,
I wasn't prepared to have this conversation today.
I don't plan. I looked at this and I don't plan to put you on the spot here, Lori. I don't think it's fair for you to answer John's comments about your agreement in this committee meeting. I think you need to take this back and respond after putting some thought into it and talking to whoever. So my plan is not to get into the weeds too much here. So that brings up another question that I have for Paul. We've apparently been dealing with Coastland without an agreement in place for over a year now. Is there any is there any urgency to this? I mean, if this didn't happen for another month or two while these problems got wound down, can we continue to just proceed with using Coastland like we've been doing for the last year?
You know, maybe Tom could comment better on that, but I would say, you know, we've been carrying on with business as usual. However, as it's come to light, you know, it's best we recognize and deal with what is in front of us and reconcile those concerns that is put forth in the memo here. And Mr. Shanahan suggested that we could easily just amend the contract and have both parties sign it, and just suggested that we bring it forward to the board.
This is Tom. You know, I've seen this before, and if we put it off for another month so we can make sure all parties are satisfied with the amended contract, and then we come back to the committee like this in maybe 2 months, requesting again to ratify the previous expenses that were made outside of the contract period, and then also agree to extension. And I believe it's legitimate to address the concerns of that have been brought up today as part of that discussion. So maybe we table it to the August committee meeting.
It sounds like the biggest controversy here is in this inspect upon request thing. I mean, the travel time charges are something that's really a negotiable thing. The billings sound like more clerical than contractual. So I would suggest that Lori, you take these four items that John's brought up and address them, and work through Tom and maybe myself and see if we can't come up with something that's agreeable to everybody. And I don't think this should take 2 months. I think this is something that if we all get on it, that this can come back to the committee next month and just proceed as proceed to the board in July, I guess. So does that sound reasonable, Lori?
Yeah, that's fine. And I have four items. I have travel time, the inspect upon request. John had a concern about the monthly bills, which is, I think, more of a district thing than a Coastland thing. We can discuss that offline. And then what was the fourth item?
John, do you want to send an email to Lori with your concerns so that she has something in front of her that she can address with whoever?
I'm happy to do that.
Address with on her end?
Sure. I can do that.
Very good. Anything else on the Coastland engineering contract?
Randy, this is Mark Martin. I just wanted to add that, and it's something that Tom and myself have been familiar with in the past. We never want to have this happen again where a contract, you know, has fallen off the radar. And so what the district has done is put in place a contract tracking system so that it's very clear when contracts are about to expire within a given year. The typical practice is at a certain point every year, a list of active contracts is distributed out to key staff, and then they review those. They determine whether or not those contracts need to be extended. And this is something that, or not, and this is something that the district secretary will maintain.
Very good. If no one has anything further, let's move on to Groundwater Sustainability Agency. Is that Mark?
Yeah. So at the last meeting, we had a very robust discussion on the GSA, Groundwater Sustainability Agency, the request by the working group for the South American sub-basin for RMCSD to determine which GSA they would like to go to. We had Jay Schneider present the case of Slough House Resource Conservation District. From that discussion, I presented what I thought, from a staff perspective, a recommendation to remain with or to go with SCGA in lieu of SRCD, Slough House Resource Conservation District. And then the direction from the board at that point was to have Shanahan to have legal put together some of the legal considerations of the obligations of a GSA. And so I just want to bring you up to date. There was a Slough House Resource Conservation District meeting regarding the MOU, and the Slough House did approve the MOU with the working group. It was all approved except for one who Mr. Schneider abstained from the vote. So they now have the district secretary of Slough House is the appointee to the working group, and Herb Garms is the alternate to that group at this point. So what we expect for this month's board meeting is that Mr. Shanahan will bring back his evaluation, essentially, as the board had asked for in the last meeting. I would also recommend that we have Linda Dorn, who is the county's groundwater sustainability agency manager. So right now, the district, since we haven't decided who we're going to go with, the district is sitting with Sacramento County as GSA, and it's not a permanent role that they want to play. So they're just in temporarily, but Linda is more of a objective party. She's familiar with other small districts that have attempted to perform as GSAs and can speak to that also. So I think we plan to have her as another person to present to the board in this month's meeting. Are there any questions?
Tom, did you want to say anything about the board talking to a consultant about this?
So far, I'm not prepared to go over what our little working group has been working on. We did talk to a consultant, and we're looking at trying to get another set of eyes on this issue, but just nothing's been completed so far.
Okay, thank you.
Action shortly.
Anything further on Groundwater Sustainability Agency update?
Hey, Randy?
Yes.
This is John. Who's the district using for water rights? Is it still the old firm that they used to use, or did they?
Yes, it's Gallery and Barton. And then for our up, this is Paul chiming in. So Gallery and Barton is still our main water rights attorney. However, on the master water right update, we're using Wagner and Bonsignore.
Okay.
Anyone else? Let's move on then to Murrieta Marketplace lots 4 and 5 easements approval. Is that Lori or Paul?
Yep, that is me. This is an extension of basically the easements that were approved for the marketplace, the spine easements. So these are the extensions that go on to the lots 4 and 5. They're public fire hydrants and other water purposes. So they're pretty basic easements. You can see my email, my transmittal summary, and then if you want to see where the easements are, I put those exhibits right in front, and then there's the easement paperwork, flat nagels behind that. I have reviewed them. They are in order. These easements are appropriate because of how the water system has been designed. They need to be public. So it is being presented to the committee for.
Okay, what's the action item here? To recommend approval and placement on the board agenda?
Correct.
Okay. I don't have any problems or questions. I see that Les is on this call. Les is kind of a resident expert on this stuff. Any questions or comments, Les?
Okay, sorry, I was unmuting myself. Now, the only comment I had is for the record, it would be good for the district to specify the extent of the public utilities to include the extension of these easements. And so classifying the facilities as public utilities would be a good idea for the record, and that's all. So, you know, it looks like these are hydrant extensions.
Correct. Yeah.
And so it would be a good idea for the district to classify those as public utilities. That way the easements are justified.
Okay, so noted. I don't have a problem with this, so we will move it to the board. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, Residences East and 670 FSA update.
All right, this is Mark. On May 27th, we finally came to resolution with the help of Dick Shanahan's group of Andrew Ramos with BKS, after a number of months of trying to sort through the obligations of what was a little bit convoluted FSA, to come to a conclusion as to the obligations of 670 FSA, and that's financing and service agreement for the public, for development of parcels. The 670 is within the RMA area. And so there's been a number generated. A letter was sent out to Mr. Kyle on May 27th, like I said, and it outlines the obligations of development properties for both water treatment plant expansion and then also the Van Vleck spray field. So what was partially confusing in trying to generate the obligation was that while the obligations of the district were listed in peak capacity gallons, the obligations of the parcels were not. And so they were just listed by lots. And so there's a certain water usage per lot of 750 gallons per day estimate. And the peak, you know, so one is basically an apples and oranges as far as units that were being used within the document. So now that once we applied the peak gallons requirement to both the residential lots and the district and other obligations, then it became much more clear. So that's been all sorted out. That letter's gone on to Mr. Kyle as of the 27th. So I think that, and then the next step for that is to bring, and this will happen shortly, bring up EPS, who's the district's fund manager for the 670 FSA, to have, bring them up to date on those findings and make sure those values are applied as various entities develop under the 670 FSA. Any questions?
Questions or comments? Hearing none.
Randy, if I could, just one other question for you. I think it would be useful to have our attorney present this, if you would like, at the board meeting, just so that the entire board can have the benefit of what was encountered, the methodology and such.
Sure. All right. And he drafted the letter. Is that correct?
Correct.
So he's in the middle of it all.
Yeah, we've worked together quite a bit, going through revisions, and prepared it for my on May 27th.
Okay, I will suggest that at the appropriate time.
And this is Amelia. Hi, this will be going to the board meeting this month in June. That's what I'm hearing.
Correct. We need to confirm that with the, their availability for that meeting. But and Dick may be able to speak to it instead of Andrew if Andrew's not available. So.
And it will be an informational item, correct? There's no action required here.
Correct.
Right. Okay, great. Anything else on that item? So we are on to director and staff comments. Anything from staff, comments or suggestions?
No comments for me.
No comments for me. This is Tom.
All right. And I have no comments. Thank you all for attending this meeting. I know it's not easy, but we seem to have gotten through it without stepping on too many toes. And I appreciate everyone's patience and courtesy under these circumstances. So everybody have a great day.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.